The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. An unprecedented breach of trust and breach of protocol in the leaking of the Supreme Court's draft decision in the Dobbs case.
Never before in modern history has an internal draft been leaked to the public while the justices were still deciding a case.
Andrew McCarthy looks at the motive.
And on their side, they want to burn down the institution.
My friend Dennis Prager looks at the Roe decision behind it all.
It did horrible damage to this country, Roe v. Wade.
We'll also look at the Senate primary in Ohio.
J.D. Vance is in a really strong position, especially after the campaign he ran.
And the broader message of the evening.
He never Trumpers. You think you might be on the wrong side of things?
All this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com and follow me, please, on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. We'll begin with the Supreme Court and the unprecedented, indeed, scurrilous leak this week of the court's draft decisions in the abortion case before them, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health. The case, many of you will remember, was argued in December of last year. We have been awaiting release of the opinion, many presumed at the end of the term in June or early July. And then, of course, a deeply flawed clerk. It's not 100% certain that it is a clerk, but it is extremely likely that it is, tried to undermine our collective rule of law, left, right, and center. He or she should be fired and disbarred, and if not yet a member of the bar, forever barred from becoming one. Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican leader in the Senate, was justifiably upset. He made it very clear on the Senate floor. I took a closer look on my program. We pick up with a clip from McConnell.
The same political movement that used a leak to move up the timeline of Justice Breyer's retirement process is trying to use yet another leak to make the court less secure and less impartial. Never before in modern history has an internal draft been leaked to the public while the justices were still deciding a case. Never before. Whoever committed this lawless act knew exactly what it could bring about. The justices already require security. Less than 2 weeks ago, an unbalanced person lit himself on fire on the court steps. Less than 3 years ago, a liberal mob tried to storm the court, shoving past law enforcement and pounding on the doors. Look, everybody knows what kind of climate the far left is trying to fuel, one that is antithetical to the rule of law. Right on cue, top Democrats began publishing wild statements about what the court might decide, packed with using unhinged rhetoric that could easily incite, light a match.
That is so important for people to understand what fanatics do. It's why I don't want people going after the fanatic that they suspect did this, because what if you're wrong? What if you get one of the deranged people on the far right to act against someone you've named online? Then the culpability is yours. Fanatics exist. You have to keep them in mind whenever you talk in a public space, that fanatics are out there on the left and the right, and you are responsible for those actions if you're the proximate cause of them. The fanatic who leaked that opinion did so much damage, put so many people in danger, eroded completely the rule of law. I want to go back to Mitch McConnell.
There are still some people in this Capitol and a majority in the Senate whose support for the rule of law is not conditional. Not conditional. The court should tune out the bad faith noise and feel completely free to do their jobs. They should follow the facts and the law wherever that leads. As I've warned in the past, courts bowing to activist pressure would never enhance judicial legitimacy. It could only erode it. And the hostage takers would never settle for half a loaf. For years, the radical left has attacked the institution of the Supreme Court. It appears their campaign hit a new low.
Leader McConnell is the man who saved the Constitution by holding open the vacancy created by the sudden untimely death of the great Antonin Scalia. And he and the entire Republican caucus deserve praise for allowing the United States electorate to decide via constitutional majority that elected Donald Trump to put three conservatives on the court who did actually what the nominees of Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush ought to have done and will effectively do, which is get us out of the woods of Roe and Casey, because they're bad law distorting the Constitution, as Justice Alito's draft opinion makes clear. Indeed, the assault on the integrity of the court was horrible, but it should not distract us and it should not hinder the court from doing what it set out to do. Abandon Roe. Overturn Casey. It ought to release the decision straight away. That has been the argument of Andrew McCarthy, a former federal prosecutor. It's an argument with which I concur. Andy was a guest on Chicago's Morning Answer, joining Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
As somebody who is a barrister and a constitutional scholar and
all-around good guy.
Reads, just in general, you must be highly entertained as well as mildly disturbed by some of the histrionics you're hearing on the law from people who are charged with making it.
I would think Representative J. Paul ought to be happy since now more people will actually be born and make it into their 20s, which is that's what she's concerned about. But, you know, as you point out, it's like self-evident nonsense. These guys are all result oriented. So, you know, this is an outcome they don't like. So now they're suddenly I don't know if they could spell stare decisis, but they suddenly believe in it. the next case around, when the left throws out some, you know, long held precedent, they'll be telling us about enlightened liberty or something. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to what color scheme the stare decisis ribbon will be that's forthcoming.
Yeah, well, you know, I just the one thing I would add to what you said about the suspect set. Mm-hmm. Is I would just, if I were an investigator, you have to start someplace. And obviously you try to figure out the circle of people who had access to this opinion. But what makes a conservative justice or a conservative law clerk conservative would cut against doing this.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's for the very reason that I think you rightly say that the legal profession, which is very left to center, the reason they would celebrate a radical leftist clerk who did this and castigate a conservative clerk who did it is because on our side, you know, we believe in norms and traditions and understand the importance of the court being able to have deliberations with confidentiality, and that's a critical aspect of the institution. And on their side, they want to burn down the institutions, you know, to the extent that they block them from the things that they want to achieve. So it's much more likely that a leftist clerk would do this simply because the leftist clerk is not only wired that way, but would be celebrated for it in a way that would not happen on the right.
But don't you think if he or she is exposed, regardless if they're a liberal or conservative, don't you think they'll be disbarred?
I sure hope so. I mean, I would like to see a more, and I don't want to criticize the justices because I don't know if they've said anything in the last 24 hours that I haven't heard. But I thought it was welcome for Chief Justice Roberts to come out and say what he said, put out that statement. I'd really like to see all nine justices come out and say that.
Mm-hmm.
And say that, you know, we are going to get to the bottom of who did this and that this isn't a conservative thing. It's not a liberal thing. It's about the court as an institution and the integrity of its processes. I think that would be a welcome statement from the progressives, but I haven't heard it yet. And I don't want to, again, I don't want to criticize them because maybe they've made it and I haven't heard it, but I sure haven't heard it.
Well, what Supreme Court justices do you think will change their vote maybe because of all this outrage and the marches in certain cities?
I really hope, Amy, that none of them do. To me, if one comma of that opinion gets changed, and look, when I write my columns, I change them after they're published sometimes, if I see something that's wrong. And I'm one of these people who, like, works up till the last second tweaking and writing and rewriting. So I understand that you want to do that because you really want to get it right up to the minute that you issue it. But in this instance, I think it would be really bad for the court if a comma got changed. I think anything that gets changed, if it's at all meaningful, including the vote tabulation, is going to be indicative of what happened here working. That is, this was leaked in order to intimidate the justices. And if they then turn around and change the vote or change the opinion, which is a brilliant opinion, then it looks like it worked, which means you invite more of it.
Andy is right. The court should not waver as a result of this blatant effort to bully and intimidate the court. There's a reason the pro-abortion forces are so upset. This draft, and we know it is a legitimate draft because Chief Justice Roberts told us so, it was written by Justice Alito, is a comprehensive rebuttal of a half century of papier-mâché defenses of Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey. Here's my friend Dennis Prager on the Roe decision.
It was an absurdity when it was passed. It did horrible damage to this country, Roe v. Wade. Completely gratuitous creator of a rift in this country. The reason we have federalism, in other words, power to states, is so that the founders brilliantly understood we don't have a monopoly on what is right. None of us does, including those of us who are conservative. We may well be wrong. We understand that. So you allow these issues to be debated by the American people and decided in each state. Then there are moral laboratories, in this case 50 of them. That's the ideal. The ideal of the left is to give the federal government more and more and more and more and more and more power. It's never enough, never enough. California will have unrestricted abortion and is promised to pay for people who come to the state to have an abortion. And that doesn't change if this is the decision of the Supreme Court. That won't change. Or New York, or Illinois, or any other left-wing state. Oregon, Washington. But everybody must live under their moral system. Everybody must be coerced to. You can't tell Mississippi what to rule on abortion. Who are you? That's the issue here, or one of the many issues.
Coming up, primaries in Ohio.
J.D. Vance is in a really strong position, especially after the campaign he ran.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. On Tuesday this week, in Indiana and in my own home state of Ohio, primaries were held. The big contest of the night, who among the crowd of qualified candidates would represent the GOP against Ohio Representative, the Democrat, Tim Ryan, also a friend of mine? The answer, many of you know, is now J.D. Vance, a friend of mine. The race is all literally too close to home for me. I turn to Aaron Baer of the Center for Christian Virtue. Now, I always go to bed early because, I got to get up early. So tell me, what time was the race over? What time did we know?
Probably by about 9:30, all of the major races were decided. But the real takeaway for BQ on this was, you know, when you left Ohio that night, you said it was a signal. The next morning, you said the 1,500 people in the church were a signal of the enthusiasm in Ohio, you know, 6 months before the election. That's one of the numbers that showed up in the polls last night when Republican turnout doubled Democrat turnout statewide. Wow. In Ohio last night. I mean, and you can't say that there wasn't a big Democrat race. Yeah, there wasn't a lot of fireworks in the Senate race, but in the Democrat governor's race, it was a really hotly contested race, and it was a double of the turnout for Republicans last night.
That is I do think, you know, Tim Ryan is my friend. Everyone knows that. I've said it 100 times, the Democratic nominee for Senate. But J.D.'s going to coast, don't you think?
For the most part, what's happened in Ohio has really turned the state red. I will say, though, Tim Ryan is the type of candidate that can win. For the last 2 months, and really because he didn't have a real primary challenger, but for the last 2 months, Tim Ryan has been running general election ads. I'm seeing all over the place, talking about standing up to China, talking about fighting for workers, really the Trump message he's running on right now and trying to convince people that that's who he is. So he's not a walkover. But J.D. Vance is in a really strong position, especially after the campaign he ran.
Tell me a little bit about your assessment of J.D. Vance's campaign. The author of Hillbilly Elegy, Yale educated, backed by Peter Thiel and Donald Trump, J.D. Vance enters this race after a bruising primary, which usually serves, if it's early, to toughen a candidate, not hurt them.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I'm not somebody who's against primaries, especially when you get a chance. A guy like J.D. Vance, who very few people actually knew here, he got out of the state, he talked to people. But what I think is really important about what J.D. Vance did, and actually what a lot of those candidates on the stage did, is they all ran on core issues that matter to conservative voters. I mean, that was the thing I walked away the most from that night we were on stage together, Hugh, was that, you know, most of these candidates, even Matt Dolan, were trying to appeal to core conservative voters, core conservative values. That's the message J.D. ran on from day one, and it carried him through. And again, there were a lot of other fine folks doing that, folks like Josh Mandel, folks like Jane Timken. They were running on that core message. J.D. was able to reach people. And, you know, I think there was an authenticity thing that he really delivered.
Okay, last and important question. How much did President Trump's endorsement matter? How much did Peter Thiel's money matter to J.D. Vance's victory?
I don't think you can understate either one of those factors in this. One, just in terms of J.D. getting his message out, but also in terms of helping folks sort through this. Because all these candidates here, you saw it. All these candidates were running on a very similar message, which conservatives need to understand how big of a win that was for the conservative movement, that these candidates now, unlike any time in Ohio, saw the way to win was appealing to core conservative issues, pro-life, pro-family, pro-freedom. Those were the issues basically every candidate tried to run on.
Quick question, Aaron. Is J.D. Vance the same as to the right or to the left of Rob Portman?
Oh, he is to the right of Rob Portman for sure.
Who do you most compare him to in the Senate?
He would say himself, Josh Hawley.
If all the candidates were running on core conservative issues, it needs to be pointed out, J.D. Vance was the one endorsed by Donald Trump. Indeed, the other Trump-endorsed candidates won Tuesday night as well. Here's Mike Gallagher.
There's not one that he endorsed that didn't win, including the black woman, the Air Force vet, who is hopefully going to become the first black woman in the U.S. Congress. One of the 22 endorsements by Donald J. Trump. 22. That's a pretty good track record. Hey, never Trumpers, you think you might be on the wrong side of things? Hey, Twitter, you think you're horribly misguided in trying to censor and stifle the Trump movement? It's not just a man. It's a movement. It's America first. And when Donald Trump endorses somebody, look at the power of that endorsement. J.D. Vance in Ohio was apparently flailing in his campaign until Donald Trump endorsed him. That's pretty powerful stuff. J.D. Vance, one quote that I read this morning, J.D. Vance was toast 2 months ago, then Trump endorsed him. The whole thing got reversed, validating the impact of Trump's endorsement. It's also a big win for Peter Thiel, who is J.D. Vance's largest financial backer and supports a handful of like-minded candidates across the country. Lots of comments on social media. One of the takeaways from one of the reporters for the AP, J.D. Vance parlayed a late endorsement from Donald Trump into a come-from-behind victory that was a testament to the power the former president still holds with the Republican voter base in Ohio. Well, it's not just Ohio. President Trump still leads the Republican Party. And think about how extraordinary that is, considering the way they have banned him from any digital presence. Let that sink in. I mean, I said that about 2016. He was up against 16 really strong Republican candidates. Man's never run for public office. And look at what he pulled off in 2016. Well, in a very powerful way, he's still defying the odds, and he's still pulling it off. There's a heated Pennsylvania GOP Senate primary. There's going to be a lot of races, a lot of elections coming up, all marching toward the November midterms. And I'm going to tell you this. I will admit I had a little bit of concern yesterday about this leaked Supreme Court document having an impact on the midterms. It's going to motivate Democrats. It's going to get them all fired up. But you know something? I woke up today with a fresh start on this. We're not going to be wallowing in that story in a few months. The far left that glorifies abortion, they're going to be apoplectic. They're going to still be stomping around and holding their breath till they turn blue. They're screaming now, oh, what's next? They're going to take away interracial marriage. Interracial marriage? What? I also love, oh, they're going to take away same-sex marriage. The Supreme Court recently had a ruling that expanded LGBT rights. The court's not going in that direction at all. Roe v. Wade was bad law. It was unconstitutional. If this Alito opinion, as a majority opinion, stands, I mean, it'll be tweaked and it'll be edited and it'll be, but if that winds up being the ruling, abortion isn't outlawed. Not at all.
Coming up, Russia's war on Ukraine.
They're not giving up until they get all of Ukraine.
Nikki Haley, when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. In just 10 minutes, I can zip through 10 stories that help me start my day and help shape where I go with the Mike Gallagher Show. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Those of us who have tracked with Russian President Vladimir Putin over the course of these past two decades have seen him morph from an autocrat to an authoritarian and now very clearly a would-be dictator who sees himself as a Russian czar tasked with reassembling the Russian Empire. What many observers did not see or fully appreciate was the ineptitude of Russia's military and the nation's willingness to peddle anti-Semitic tropes in a foolhardy effort to move public opinion. I'm referring here to Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and his assertion that Hitler had Jewish roots and Ukrainian President Zelensky's Jewish origins are, quote, not a guarantee against rampant neo-Nazism in the country. I turn to Nikki Haley, our nation's former ambassador to the UN, to comment.
The Russians have really surprised everyone with the depth of their malignity. And Ambassador, Foreign Minister Lavrov's comments about Israel and Hitler, it's just insane. Is this the Lavrov you dealt with?
Absolutely. Did not surprise me one bit. He is a twisted individual who has a terrible drinking problem, who will do nothing and say nothing that's too outrageous. I mean, he's just a ridiculous individual. And what he's going to do is say whatever he can to get attention, to put fear in the hearts of every person in this world. And that's what he's trying to do. And they don't care whether they're lying. They just believe in distraction. And I think that Russia knows they're losing this war. I think they're going to try and distract in every way possible. I think that there's hatred at the start of all of this. And I think that they are not just going to limit this to parts of Ukraine. They're not giving up until they get all of Ukraine. And we should also believe them when they say they want Poland and the Baltics as well.
I do not believe that your time overlapped with National Security Advisor O'Brien when you were the ambassador and in the cabinet. He was a National Security Advisor. But he wrote a piece for The Wall Street Journal suggesting that President Biden and his team articulate exactly what would happen if a tactical nuclear weapon was used in Ukraine. Do you agree that we ought to be very specific about the consequences of such an unheard of escalation?
Well, you know, I do know Ambassador O'Brien and actually worked with him in a different capacity when he was at the State Department. You know, we shouldn't assume that Russia will never use nuclear weapons, but we should focus every day on how we prevent them from using nuclear weapons. And the way you prevent them from using nuclear weapons is with strength, not cowering to them, not running from them, not worrying about provoking them, but with strength. And you don't do it with just American strength. You do it with strength of America and her allies. This is a time to really solidify the world on the dangers of Russia, whether it's pointing out their rhetoric, whether it's pointing out the fact that they're killing innocent civilians, whether it's pointing out the fact that they haven't kept their word on any of this, whether it's pointing out war crimes. When we do that, that's when we pull in the Indias of the world. That's when we bring in Japan. That's when we bring in our European allies. And that's when we speak with one voice and tell Russia that if you do this, there will be hell to pay. And that's the decision we have to make as a unit of allies that want to save freedom in this world.
Ambassador Haley, do you connect the dots between President Obama's failure to enforce the red line, the genocide in Syria that followed the 2014 Russian invasion and the 2022 Russian invasion? Are those all of a piece?
I think it's all part of, you know, a similar plan that you look at countries, and I saw this at the United Nations. They watch every word we say. They watch every action we take. They literally pay attention to every detail of everything we do, which we should also be doing of them, by the way. But when they do that, they look for weak spots. And when they find a weak spot, they try and exploit it. That was actually a major dangerous decision that Obama did. President Trump fixed that by making sure that when Russia and Assad used chemical weapons in Syria, he went and sent missiles into that area that hit their chemical areas. And so I think that sent a big message that, look, we know what Obama did, but we believe in red lines and we're going to enforce them. That all went backwards in a major way when Biden, you know, left Afghanistan in the middle of the night without telling our allies, who we asked to be there, who stood shoulder to shoulder with us for decades. It was a hugely weak moment for America, and it was a green light for every enemy that we have.
I'm older than you by a lot. And so in 1978, things were really bleak, and I went to work for Richard Nixon, and Iran was in chaos, and Cubans were all over Africa, and the Soviet Union was advancing on many fronts and invaded Afghanistan. This and stagflation, this feels a lot like 1978, but then 1980 arrived. Am I being overly optimistic that we always hit a peak, a point this low before we bounce back?
Sometimes we have to hit rock bottom to know where up is. Now all we have to do is look up and say, okay, now it's time for each and every one of us to get to work. You know, what you can find is the world is more dangerous when we are distracted. We have been completely distracted for way too long, whether it's on culture wars, whether it's on CRT, whether it's on the fact that military members have to go and take pro-gender pronoun classes is beyond me. We have to go and stop all of the distractions and start focusing on freedom again and focusing on a strong America. That's when we'll win. We've done it before. I have faith we're going to be okay. We just have to get back on the right track.
Coming up, the war on the West.
No other culture has such a lack of reverence for the people who've gone before them.
Douglas Murray in the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. We see going on in Ukraine right now a military conflict in Europe like we haven't seen since the end of the Second World War. We are also in the midst of a different sort of war, a cultural war, what our next guest calls the War on the West, in the title of his new book. British writer Douglas Murray is one of those with the temerity to push back. He joined my friend Dennis Prager.
My theory is that whites is a euphemism for the West, which is exactly the title. They hate the West. Whites built the West. And so that's your theory as well?
Yes. And I'd add to it, remember that the most derogatory term of our era is dead white men. That's just the product of dead white men. There's an interesting thing about this, of course, is that the arrogant young people in particular who use this term think that it's not only wrong to be white and male, but also to be dead, as if that's not a problem that will ever come to them. This is why the classical tradition has become part of the, it has become one of the things in the target sites of these cultural revolutionaries. They come for all of the arts because it's the creation of dead white men. They hate classical music because it's composed largely by dead white men. There are Baroque ensembles in America that are tearing themselves apart at the moment because they can't find enough black female composers from the Baroque era. No other culture does this to themselves. The publishing houses of the West desperately try to find anyone other than dead white men to celebrate. And this, we are the only culture that does this to ourselves. No other culture has such a lack of reverence for the people who've gone before them, for all of the political figures, for all of the political heroes, for all of the founding fathers, for Abraham Lincoln, for all of the presidents, all of the writers, the artists, the musicians, the thinkers. No other culture would hate all of these people. Only the West has decided to hate itself. And so one of the things we've seen is the development of what I say, quoting Lord Clark, Alan Clark, Clark's father, Kenneth, the late Kenneth Clark, a very distinguished historian. Kenneth Clark said that one of the great virtues of the West, one of the great virtues was what he described as courtesy. Now, the thing with courtesy is it can be taken advantage of. And we in the West have become used to being courteous so that we travel around the world and we look at the cathedral, we look at the temples of the Far East and don't look at the cathedrals on our own doorsteps. We're courteous towards every tradition other than our own. We think it's polite to flatter every tradition other than our own. American writers look to Native American wisdom and First Nations wisdom. And we now have in America, even in the STEM subject, this nonsense of saying, for instance, that maths itself, as I go into in the book, is a Western white concept, and that black people and indigenous peoples have, quote, other ways of knowing. And we flatter that. We pretend that there are answers that are not mathematics. We pretend that there are other ways of knowing instead of science. And the consequence of this is that we pull the whole house down. Because, of course, the thing about mathematics is not that it is the creation of white people, but that it works. The thing with the Western scientific method is not that it was created by white people, but that it works. And so once you pretend and you're courteous and pretend that other things are just as good as what you have, you actually begin the process of disintegration.
So I return, though, and I'm not sure we can know an answer. It's very similar to a book I wrote many, many years ago called Why the Jews, The Reason for Anti-Semitism. The hatred of Jews in large measure emanated from what the Jews brought into the world. The God of the West, the Bible of the West, for Christians, the Messiah of the West. I mean, the Jews brought a lot in. And people don't like that. So it's a hatred of those that have done good, ironically.
Yes. It's a war on everything that has worked.
Right.
That's one of the signals of it. And I just add one other thing quickly. I quote Nietzsche in the book quite a lot. Nietzsche had a great phrase for some of the people we're talking about. He describes, and this is exactly what I say, he describes people who talk about justice but mean revenge.
Right. I want to just develop this point. The hatred of the white is, as I said, a euphemism for the hatred of the West. Mm-hmm. See, the fact of the matter is, Western classical music is the greatest music ever written.
Yes.
And they resent whites for having written it. Just as there was a great non-Jewish thinker. He wrote The Jewish Mystique, Ernest von den Haag. He used to write for National Review. He's a brilliant thinker. And he wrote, and this is an area I have some expertise in, anti-Semitism. I taught Jewish history on the college level, and I wrote this book. Von den Haag said the Jews were hated for bringing into the world a judging God. And the whites are hated not for slavery. If slavery meant you would be hated, there would be far more hatred of the Islamic and Arab worlds.
That's the point I bring across in the book, by the way. I deliberately bring in information like that, which I think almost nobody in America knows. You know, the transatlantic slave trade was an appalling, vile trade. It was also totally typical of the time. Everybody was selling and buying slaves. Of course, as Voltaire famously said in the 18th century, the only thing more wicked than what the Europeans were doing to the Africans was what the Africans were doing to their brother and sister Africans in stealing them and selling them and then trading in them. But put that aside for a second. Does one in a million Americans know that if maybe 10 million people, poor souls, were trafficked across the Atlantic during the transatlantic slave trade, does one in a million Americans know that up to 18 million African slaves were traded east to the Arab countries in the same period? Why then are there no descendants in Arabia? Because the Arabs, unlike the Americans and the Europeans, castrated every male so that there would not be another generation of blacks in the continent. So this was an actually genocidal movement. Does anyone in the world, anyone in the West who beats up on the West, the undoubted evils of the slave trade, know that everybody did this?
Coming up.
I believe that the purpose of life is to a great extent to be found in locating that which is beautiful and good, and desiring to not just continue it, but to add to it if you can.
A few more minutes with Douglas Murray in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Don Crow. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, an unprecedented leak from the Supreme Court. The draft opinion from the court's forthcoming decision on abortion.
This amounts to something akin to treason inside the sealed world of the United States Supreme Court.
We'll look at the motive behind such a leak.
The left plays the long game, and they are out to destroy every institution in America.
We'll discuss what's inside the draft decision itself.
And I tell you what, it is a barn burner.
We'll also look at states like California that look to facilitate something like abortion tourism.
California has decided we want to bring everyone from the rest of the United States to California and give them abortions here.
We have all this and more. Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. When we consider some of the odious aspects of our own nation's past, we need to do so with eyes wide open. That is, we should view our past with moral clarity, but also, we should have a boldness and appreciation over the culture and the civilization that our predecessors built. Douglas Murray thinks the West is worth defending. Here he is, again, talking with Dennis about his new book, The War on the West.
I think that I'm driven by a vision of what a good life is. and what a good world looks like. And that isn't the same thing as a perfect world, and it isn't the same thing as a John Lennon-like imagined dream. It is that there is an optimal situation, which I believe I've seen versions of, a type of civilization which is as good as it can get. Now, you might say, what exactly is that? And as I say at one point in the book, if you asked me what I loved about Western civilization, I could spend the first hour just listing cities: Paris, Rome, Florence, Venice, Barcelona, Madrid. So I believe that I was lucky to be brought up in a moment when a vision of Western civilization was still visible, when it was still discernible, albeit through murk, through mist and much more, through a smog, you might say. But I saw it, and I believe in it, and I admire it, and I want, crucially, to retain it. I don't want to destroy it. I don't want to do what the Cultural Revolutionaries do and tear it down in the belief that what I could put up afterwards would be better. I believe that the purpose of life is, to a great extent, to be found in locating that which is beautiful and good, and desiring to not just continue it, but to add to it if you can.
If you look at the leading, what is known as public intellectuals of the right, or conservative public intellectuals, a disproportionate number of them are blacks, Jews, and gays. Isn't that interesting?
Yes. Well, for a movement entirely comprised of bigots, of course.
Yes, and homophobes and anti-Semites. When you look at the list, I could send you the list I've compiled.
Very funny.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's truly outliers.
Mm.
In each of those communities, the dominant strain is on the left.
Yes. Yes, it's possible that that itself throws up anomalies. My belief is, if you walk through one fire, you will find it easier to walk through the next one, and on, until you become a quite practiced fire walker.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch the full conversation of Dennis with Douglas Murray at our website, townhallreview.com. If you like our podcast, take a moment to give us a glowing 5-star review. If you haven't signed up yet, please take a moment to do so. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schumann, producers David Pouchon, Michael Cook, Ben Brigman, Alex Perez, Adam Ranzi, Jacob Orduña, and of course, Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.